Happy Friday, everyone, from NPR Music. It's a special edition of New Music Friday, where we gather members of the NPR Music team to talk about our favorite albums of the year so far. We have assembled a monster panel of heavy-hitting intellectual music lovers. Starting with the man across from me in the studio, Mr. Lars Gotrich.
Hey,
Lars.
Stephen Thompson.
Lars is here. Ann Powers. Hi, Ann.
I'm just feeling all the brain energy in the room.
Almost too much assembled intelligence. Speaking of which, Sheldon Pierce. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Hey, Stephen. Great to be here.
Great to have you. I see Tom Heisinger. Hi, Tom.
Totally tickled to be here, Stephen.
It is a delight, as always. And Hazel Sills.
Can't say I'm tickled to be here, but I'm excited.
Well, it is a pleasure to have everyone here. Each one of us has brought one album that we want to talk about that has really delighted us over the course of the first half of this year. We have a broad cross-section of music, and I hope that everyone listening finds something that they love. I guess I get to invoke host privileges and kick us off with my favorite album of the year so far, though there was a lot of competition. I'm going just like straight ahead. Look, lots of people love this record. I love this record. It's by Noah Kahan. It is called The Great Divide. So Noah Kahan, you know, certainly having a huge year, this album is a very, very big hit. He just brings to this record, I think, such a wealth of emotional intelligence. These are songs based on reflection, based on experience, based on, you know, really looking inward and picking apart decisions that he's made in his life. And I love this record's approach to friendship and family and his role in how things have gone in his life.
Well, you know, Stephen, in true Noah Kahan style, I'm going to get personal. you know, when I first started listening to the album, I started at the beginning with the opening track, The End of August, and I admit I got a little weepy. I mean, just so in awe of how the song worked on me. Clear-eyed, open-heartedly honest, in a way cinematic, how the music quietly unfolds, you know, helping to put the focus on these really amazing lyrics. There's so many good lines in that song. And when I got to the line that goes, the minute that September hits, I'm going off my medicine, late August angst in a pointless night, and the feeling of being alive for the first time in a long time. Mm. It just hit hard.
Ending of August, the bugs are just starting to die. All the neighbors are voting for someone who wins every time. I thought getting older, man, no, it's too late to try. I tried getting sober, I swear I did better this time.
I think the real leap on this record, on The Great Divide, leaping from his massive hit Stick Season, is really the music. You know, working not only with his usual producer, Gabe Simon, but also with pop star whisperer Aaron Dessner, Kahan expanded his sound, but he also got back to a sound that he was excellent at before he became super famous. He is using his voice in really beautiful ways. He's going back to a soulfulness that he had before he became Mr. Stomp Clap, you know? And that's what I love. I love the soulfulness.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to respond to the Stomp Clap because I think I avoided this record because of the associations with Stomp Clap Hey, which is a period of time in music that is unfortunately seared into memory. And
you worked at NPR in the late aughts.
Yes. But, you know, I gave this record a shot in preparing for this show. And, you know, I gotta hand it to him. The songwriting is extremely mature. I like his use of melody. He's thinking about how a melodic line is going to flow and how it's going to work with harmonies rather than it just being all about him. There's a bit more, even though the album is very much about him, there's a little bit more of like a collective spirit to it. And so I resonated with that. I don't know that I'll return to this record, but like for the kind of music he's making and the kind of people who receive it, I think this is probably one of the better records I've heard from this kind of pop music.
Yeah, I was just really struck by the stories on this album. You know, I don't always love it when artists kind of reflect on the relationship to success and fame, but I feel like Noah really pulls it off because it's coming from this place of, you know, growth and outpacing relationships and his relationship to his hometown. So I really, really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Well, I think we can all agree, especially from Sheldon's silence, that every single one of us love this record and think it's the best of the year so far.
I love how much you love this record, Stephen. That's what I love about this record.
All right, well, we're going to move on. That is Noah Kahan. His album is The Great Divide. Next up, Hazel Sills. Hazel Sills, give us your pick.
Well, it's definitely not Stomp Clap, that's for sure.
No, it is not. It's awesome.
I want to talk about what is definitely my favorite album of the year so far. It's an album titled You by the artist Underscores. Last night, I had a dream about the perfect song. I know I'm too far gone. Oh, my eyes and forgot all of the notes. But any chance you know how it goes. There's something up with you. I just can't get a read on. When you walk into the room, it's like you have a theme song. And you're really calling me. So I might as well just do it. You, it feels like you say. It's a miracle, you're not New York Catholic and not LA spiritual. I just can't stand when people talk that they're a therapist. But your words sound like they come from God, I can't compare to it. I try and I'm nervous. And I don't know what to do. Never tell this world with someone. I just wanna catch up to you. And I don't know where it comes from. And the night is fast asleep. And there's no way you can move it. You don't wanna stay back for me. It's just when I'm with you, it feels like you. Underscores is the project of an artist named April Harper Gray. This is her third album, and I think it is just such a strong statement about who she is as an artist and a producer. Like so many artists that I love, Gray is kind of this like one-woman studio. She like writes all her own music, produces it, records it. She grew up making music and posting it online as a tween. And I think this album is basically her attempt at making a proper pop album. She has this kind of hyper pop, dubstep background, and I think she funnels all of that eccentricity into an album that is really leveling up her production and her songwriting. She also recorded a lot of this music in transit while on tour in like hotel rooms and things like that. And the result is an album that I think is about constantly moving, not just like moving to the next place physically, but also her thinking about the next place in her career she wants to move to and leveling up her stardom. And yeah, I was really, really impressed with this album.
I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you thought about this album in relationship to the Olivia Rodrigo album?
Oh, interesting.
Not really.
Because they both kind of have the same arc. They both are about the arc of a relationship. And I think underscores, I mean, respect to Olivia. She's the queen, but at the moment, anyway.
She's a queen.
She's our current queen. But I really love the way these songs hold together to tell the story of an unresolved, conflicted relationship. And I think that underscores writes beautifully. I guess I'll call her Amy. I think Amy writes beautifully about desire and how messed up desire is. How messed up desire can be. Sometimes it can be beautiful and simple, but often it's messed up.
Desire rules. Sheldon, I'm curious for your thoughts on this because we'll get to your pick a little bit later in the show. But to me, Hazel's pick and your pick felt similar enough and kind of in conversation with each other enough to the point where when I was done listening to one, Spotify started playing the next without my having queued them up. So I'm curious what you thought of this record.
Yeah, I would say that if I hadn't chosen my record, I probably would have chosen underscores you as my record for this. I do see similarities in them a lot. This record, I mean, for me as a fan of like turn of the millennium rap, like Timbaland and Neptunes, and as a fan of K-pop, like this record is mining those sounds to very forward-thinking ends. It's so sonically rich, but it's also like very emotionally vulnerable. I think people often struggle to wrap their brains around hyperpop because it seems to be trying to download the entire internet at once. And glitch out in its explosion of trying to sell you all those ideas at once. But this record to me is like so focused in its aims, not just creatively, but in terms of the story that it's telling. And it does really feel like an artist sort of coming into her own and trying to figure out what she wants to do with her music. And I think it's Spellbinding. If you don't know me, and I don't know you.
You know, I was so ready to not like this record, but then, oops.
Love that.
And the reason I say that is because, as many of you know, I'm not much of a fan of hyperpop, which I'm not saying this album is a hyperpop album, but it definitely leans in that direction. But whatever you want to call it, it was just working for me. But I would say in micro doses. I mean, it is exhilarating, but it's also exhausting. I mean, it's a truly breathless record, and also what I like about it is you never really know quite where she's taking a song, and I think I like that almost improvisatory feel, but you just know that like every moment of every track is like highly polished and highly thought out, and in that it's awesome.
That is Underscores. Underscores' new album is You, Hazel Sills' pick, and it sounds like Sheldon Pierce's runner-up for Best Album of the Year so far. We've got more picks coming up after the break. From NPR Music, it's New Music Friday, a special edition where members of the NPR Music staff are running down our favorite albums of 2026 so far. I am here with Tom Heisinger, Hazel Sills, Lars Gotrich, Ann Powers, and Sheldon Pierce, and I am Stephen Thompson. It is now Ann Powers' turn.
Yay!
Ann, give us your pick. Best album of the year so far. We just talked about it on this show just last week.
Well, I'm bringing in With Every Breath I Take, the new orchestral album from my favorite arty woman and jazz's great singer, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant.
There's not a morning that I open up my eyes and find I didn't dream of you. Without a warning, though it's never a surprise, soon as I awake, thoughts of you arise. With every breath I take,
I'm a Cecile McLaurin-Savant super fan. I love every record she's ever done. I think she is a revolutionary force in jazz. And I knew this strings album was coming. Cecile has finally made a fully orchestrated album working with the Metropole Orkest, which is a Dutch orchestra, and with the arranger Darcy James Argue. This is a collection of standards, of show tunes. There's one original on it, but it's really Cecile, to my mind, the GOAT in jazz, and certainly in vocal jazz, working at an Olympic level. The technique alone on this record is outstanding, but she is bringing her super creative ears and sensibility to songs that we, well, at least those of us who love standards, know so well, whether it's Sophisticated Lady or Lush Life or one of my favorites, Send in the Clowns. Oh, I could talk for an hour just about her version of Send in the Clowns. It's so incredible working with Darcy Argue's arrangement, which sort of tilts everything, and then her vocal tilts everything, absolutely capturing the beautiful imbalance that that song offers to us.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair.
Some of the choices that both Cecile and Darcy make on this album are so interesting to me. When I first spent time with it, I immediately went back to Scott Walker's first solo albums and the way, specifically when he would sing Jacques Brel songs, and he would elongate certain phrases to put an emphasis on what he wanted you to pay attention to, and in kind, the arrangements would do the same. And there are some points in this album where I was like, well, that was a choice.
For sure.
Yeah.
She really pushes things.
She really pushes it in a way that, like, makes me question both what she's doing, but also how I am receiving that choice, which I like that in an album experience. But she also does some fairly straightforward arrangements. Like, she does the love theme from Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which is one of my favorite songs.
One of my favorite songs.
And she keeps it pretty straight, but in a way that still does the tilt that you're talking about.
Depuis quelques jours, je vis dans le silence des quatre murs de mon amour. Depuis ton départ, l'ombre de ton absence me poursuit chaque nuit et me fuit chaque jour.
I go pretty hot and cold on this album, I have to admit. I think her voice has never sounded better, for sure. But I kept asking myself at times, you know, are some of these songs too deconstructed for their own good. Hmm. I know her art well enough to know that she was not going to take these standards straight. And, you know, always something fresh. But for me, I just kept asking, maybe a few too many times during the album, you know, is this a little too fresh?
Well, Cecile likes nothing more than to go out on a limb.
Right.
And so if it doesn't work for you, or if you think she fell off, I can respect that. But anyway, I love it. It's not a record for the background.
Right.
It's a record for the foreground.
All right, that is Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. Her album is With Every Breath I Take, and Powers' pick for the best album of 2026 so far. Seamless transition. This is going to be so smooth. You're going to be like, wait, is this another Cecile McLaurin-Salvant record?
They're both sublime. They're always.
You know what? They both go out on limbs. Lars Gotrich, give us your pick.
My pick is An Undying Love for a Burning World, the first album in 10 years by the heavy metal juggernauts Neurosis. Neurosis is a heavy metal band that's been around for over 40 years at this point. This is a metal band in a constant state of evolution. They started out as a hardcore punk group and then over time became to define what's known as post-metal, which basically mixes all different kinds of extreme sounds to make something heavy, but not necessarily always loud. Mm-hmm. You're getting all the girth, you're getting everything in. This Neurosis album is called An Undying Love for a Burning World, and it comes with so much story.
That's what I have written in my notes. There's so much backstory here.
There's so much story. And I'll run through it very, very quickly, but suffice to say, a founding member of the band quietly was fired from the band in 2019, and then it came out in 2022 that he had psychologically and physically abused his family. And this was such a shock for the metal world. And so when on March 20th, they pulled a straight up Beyonce, like no album announcement, no singles, no teasers, no anything. They dropped an entire album without that member. And they introduced Aaron Turner, who has also made a serious case for post-metal in his bands Isis and Sumac. And together they have made this record that's very much about the reconciliation of a world that feels like it's constantly on fire and how to live in that world and why it is worth fighting for. Musically, it is very much up the Neurosis alley, but there's more time to sit with those lyrical revelations. They spend a lot more time with like ambient interludes to kind of like let you sit with like how devastating the world can be, but how much it's worth fighting for.
I appreciate that you mentioned the kind of the ambient interludes. I mean, I think one thing that really works for me about this record is how it can be punishing. It can be sprawling. The last couple songs on this record are like 10 and 17 minutes long. There's a sprawl to it, but at the same time, there are these moments of beauty. Hmm. And so it can be very riffy and punishing and metal, but it also, there's space in it to breathe.
There's space to breathe, but I also, you know, I don't know if I'm necessarily listening. First of all, I'm not listening to that much metal, but when I am listening to metal, I feel like I'm not necessarily listening to it for the writing and the lyrics. But there were so many moments on this album that I was struck with, you know, these very beautiful kind of cathartic lyrics. Like there's that line, you know, we have forgotten we are wild, so we suffer, on the song We Are Torn Wide Open.
Lars's hands are on his heart right now.
Yeah.
That opening song, I was listening to the album this morning. I was walking to work. I literally cried.
It's so beautiful. And it really kind of encapsulated the tone of the album for me. This like idea of, you know, you really need to kind of lean into that free, wild expression of grief and confusion, and we have to do that as humans sometimes. And yeah, so I thought that was gorgeous.
We've forgotten how to struggle, so we suffer! We've forgotten how to die, so we suffer! We've forgotten we are wild, so we suffer! We exist in isolation, so we suffer!
I just want to shout out Aaron Turner. What a great combo, his vocals with this band. It's really working.
Yeah, I was about to say, when I saw that Aaron Turner had joined this band, my ears perked up. I mean, the Sumac record that was released with More Mother last year was one of my favorites. And so I was expecting this record to be everything that it was. To Hazel's point, there's a lot of visceral imagery, like bodies weary and bruised, knotted in darkness, like corpses in the snow. It is like playing with a lot of sort of like scary stuff in a way that is sort of like hauntingly beautiful.
I do have a question for you, Lars. I was thinking about metal vocals, and it's a real legit style, this kind of octave below laryngitis gravelly vocal stuff. And you know, as the opera guy at NPR Music, I was just wondering, like, you know, I was wondering if like the great metal vocalists are visiting their ENTs as much as opera singers do.
For sure.
There is a story about Andrew WK, especially like at the height of his screamy power metal kind of years, he had like a vocal trainer. So yeah, hopefully they're checking in with their instrument.
Yeah, there are trainers who specialize in extending those guys' careers.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, that is Neurosis. Neurosis's album, An Undying Love for a Burning World, is Lars Gotrich's favorite album of 2026 so far. We've got two more records we're going to get to. First, we're going to take one last quick break. From NPR Music, it's New Music Friday, running down our favorite albums of 2026 so far. We have assembled a dream team of NPR Music heavy hitters, Sheldon Pierce, Hazel Sills, Lars Gotrich, Tom Heisinga, Ann Powers, and me, Stephen Thompson. Sheldon Pierce, you are up next. Give us your pick.
Yeah, as you teased with the Underscores album, my album is in the same sort of hyper-poppy space. It's from a 26-year-old LA transplant named Tiffany Day. It's called Halo. Halo, I would say, is a bit more on the blown-out maximalist side of hyperpop. The music mashes up dubstep and late aughts electropop and future bass, Warped Tour punk and electro clash. It is not going to be for everyone. I will lead with that caveat. But for me, it is one of the most interesting records released this year. Tiffany Day was a sort of like
viral sensation in her youth who built a YouTube platform as a teenager and then was making like mood lit bedroom R&B. It was working, but didn't really resonate in the ways in which the music she makes now, which is much bigger, much more massive, much more glitched out, and much more meta in its considerations on like what it means to be a young woman artist who is constantly performing online and then also trying to reckon with identity. For me, it is the meta nature of the music that makes it really interesting. She is thinking about the liminal spaces between work and labor and attention and engagement and inspiration and being an artist and being a fan. And all of that is wrapped up in the music of Halo.
I just gotta say, this record is cool, but my vote for the best music writing of the year, Sheldon, is your piece on this record.
Sheldon is a phenomenal writer if you're not reading him.
I'm humbled by the goat.
Truly, you wrote such a great piece about this, and it really made me listen to this record with new ears, because I think a superficial listen of this record, you're going to just hear kind of Tiffany's perky voice and the energetic quality of the music and maybe not get to the depth and complexity that's there. You got to take some time.
Yeah, there's real heart on this album and life in this album, even if it, like, and as you said, someone might listen to it and just hear that kind of hyperpop, artificial, glitchy sound. But yeah, so much of this album is about self-realization and like, you know, she's trying something new in this music, but she's also working through in real time what it means to take creative risks as an artist and figure out who she is. I was really endeared to that song Copycat, which is basically a song about like wanting to be someone else. And, like, and yeah, I think like even including a song like that on your album is a statement. And yeah, hearing her work through these ideas in this music made it so much more interesting and complicated to me.
Can I be the superficial person here?
That's usually my role, but I'll allow it.
Here's the thing that like really struck me about this and the Underscores record is that I was trying to figure out why I was so attracted to these hyperpop albums and not other ones, because I think I am also with Tom, like, I don't get it. but I think the thing that like really attracted me about it is like the way that she writes her melodies is just, it's like the Postal Service meets early 2000s ball punk. So it's just super catchy. You get these hints of, yes, that there's this deeper thing going on. But then I listen to a song like Same LA and I'm like, yeah, that's a banger.
Yeah.
That's a big
bop. That is a banger.
That's the standout song on that record for me. It's a pretty straightforward pop song. But I really like the fact that it's kind of electro pop meets the club dance floor at times, yeah, too. So yeah, you can get up on your feet with this record.
That is Tiffany Day. Her album Halo is Sheldon Pierce's favorite album of 2026 so far. We've got one more pick. Tom Heisinger, buddy, what do you got for us?
Well, I've got a 50-year-old piece of Dutch minimalism that...
I mean, of course, I was going to bring the 50-year-old piece of Dutch minimalism, but I was like, Tom will be here.
Me too.
I mean, my theory actually is that we are all hardwired to be attracted to minimalist music. I mean, our lives are made up of these clock-like cycles, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the earth spins, the sun rises and sets. We recycle our daily routines. And this hour-long piece, there are riffs of rhythm and melody that interlock and repeat and slowly transform. Let's listen to just a little bit of how it gets started. It's called Canto Ostinato. And it's by the Dutch composer Simeon ten Holt. And the performers here are Sandbox Percussion, Metropolis Ensemble, and the pianist Eric Hall. So you have these like little delicious, delicate little ripples there, right? But then the piece kind of undulates in these waves and you have a lot much larger sounds that kind of just roll over you like about three quarters of the way through. And then there's like this separate melody on top.
There is such a wondrous quality to this music. I feel like I'm jumping from one dream to another. Like every minute, it has a very dream logic style quality to it. It's very playful but unexpected. Everything is named in sections. So section 88 to 90, it reminded me of like if there was like a chamber group playing Bach in an M.C. Escher like kind of painting.
I love that. Yeah, there's a lot of interlocking going on.
Yeah, I really, really, really loved this album.
Tom, I have a question for you about this piece. I was doing a little reading about it, and it seems like it was originally meant to be performed by four keyboard players. So this is kind of an expansion or a variation on the usual way it's performed, right?
Exactly. And that's what I also love, the freedom that's actually baked into the music, because the composer, Simeon ten Holt, really imagined that, you know, various groups of instruments could play it, large or small, and this new arrangement, which is for mallet instruments, winds, strings, and piano. I mean, to me, it just seems like it's the perfect size. It gives the music the heft when it needs it, and yet it can pare down to these smaller, more intricate points of view. And I love it because ultimately, it's music you can get lost in. But I found too that it performs this kind of utilitarian function, in that it works like kind of this musical scrubber that can wipe clean the slate of your mind in order to create space for you to think.
I love that. Actually, I took it on a walk, and it's actually great to exercise to this music. It's really does.
Yeah, I also
have,
walked listening to it. Yeah.
If I ever try exercise, I will do this. I will do the same thing.
Steven, you don't leave the studio, right? You're actually here 24/7. Yeah, it's a bunker.
Well, I have to say, if you ever get a chance to hear it live, go. I saw it here in D.C. a few months ago, and it was just an extraordinary intoxication.
That was my first thought. I was like, how would this play in concert? It's such a hypnotic piece of music, but it's also so dynamic. There are so many movements that swell, so many sections that get big and really detailed. There are so many places to live in it. I mean, walking with it really is an experience because you sort of like find yourself getting pulled into the rhythm of it. It's just a really, really sort of twinklingly beautiful piece of music.
That is Canto Ostinato, performed by Sandbox Percussion, Metropolis Ensemble, and pianist Eric Hall. Tom Heisinger's pick for the best album of 2026 so far. This has been so fun, y'all.
Yeah.
It is just delightful to listen to people talk about their favorite music. It's just one of my favorite things, which is good that I have this job.
Let's have a whole other episode where we just talk about Wendy Eisenberg's self-titled album, which is so good.
Give me one more minute to list all my other favorite albums. All right, listeners, we want to know your favorite album of the year so far. Let us know in the Spotify or Apple Music comments. We also wouldn't say no if you were to leave us a dazzling review wherever you get your podcasts. Tom Heisinger, Ann Powers, Hazel Sills, Sheldon Pierce, Lars Gottrich, thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you, Stephen.
Had a blast.
Thank you, Stephen.
This was so fun. This episode was produced by Noah Caldwell and Elle Mannion and edited by Otis Hart. Our production assistant is Dora Levitt. The executive producer of NPR Music is Saraya Mohammed. We'll be back next week to discuss more new music from Jack White, Baby Rose, Allison Russell, and more with Maggie Brennan of WCBE in Ohio. Until then, take a moment to be well. Celebrate your independence this weekend by unplugging from the internet and getting outside, and treat yourself to lots of great music.